Steve Sherlock with another in a series of Franklin Matters radio shows, number 260 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Anne Marie Tracy. In our weekly cycle, we've now had this conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talked about the extension of the closure by the state until May 18 and the reopening advisory work underway at the state level, as well as within the town departments. The Board of Health had issued their facial covering order effective April 29, and during our conversation, Jamie updated that Governor Baker had just issued one statewide effective May 6. The combined department spotlight on finance and treasurer-collector operations was discussed. The move to virtual work, including the internal processing of the online payments via UniPay. Amongst other topics covered, we included the pink bag clothing recycling returned. The budget subcommittee has a meeting on May 4. The school committee approved their initial budget, which will likely endure some changes as the budget process goes. The USDA grant that the schools have for the meal program. The scavenger hunt by the cultural district on a photo contest underway. And finally, Friday Night Lights to recognize the FHS senior class. The recording runs around 59 minutes, so listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters and Franklin Public Radio here on another Friday session of Talk Franklin with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and our marketing communications specialist, Anne-Marie Tracy. Good afternoon, folks. How are you doing on this Friday?
Doing well, Steve. Thank you.
Doing fantastic, Steve. Glad to be here as always.
Good. We'll do a kind of quick recap. It's been a relatively eventful week. Not that each of these weeks hasn't been eventful. Some have been more so than others, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think every hour is eventful in our world. And to some degree, Steve, I have to admit, like, this is just, in some ways, this is part of being a town administrator or a superintendent or a town manager or a mayor. When you remember, I think you're always working in some ways like this because it's the nature of the environment today. But I think even in these times, you know, it just becomes illuminated a little bit more. It's obviously very different than normal, but, you know, I don't think there is maybe such a thing as normal. You know, I think you have to recognize in a job like mine, no matter what happens, with this level of uncertainty, no matter where you are, no matter how much you've been impacted, from what we had 7 weeks ago, you know, it's clearly just a lot of uncertainty. And we're so used to being a Google search society for our information that I think we expect the instantaneous gratification of information. And in these types of times, that's the complete opposite of what we have, right? So yeah. I think you have to pay attention at every hour and be willing to adjust, adapt, and, you know, I think so far, I think, you know, I say this every week on your show, but it's worth it while I've got people's attention before I don't bore them. But, you know, that's what our town departments have been doing for the last 7 weeks. And I say this on our weekly call just a couple hours ago, Anne Marie was on it, but, you know, the more and more I go into this, and the more and more I believe our community was, you know, really well prepared for this as well as anyone could be. And I think that's a testament to our citizens and our elected officials for supporting our agencies that much. The spirit of the community for sure. And also our department heads and our staff are just second to none. They're the best team I've ever been a part of.
Because I think, Dave, you go back to your Google point, you know, we're so used to searching and finding an answer in seconds. At this point, clearly, as we've talked, and it's a reality. We don't have, in some cases, the great answer. We don't know where it is. It's certainly, we're developing the new normal as we go.
Yeah.
And living with that uncertainty is challenging for some folks more than for others. Even those who of us who, you know, do deem themselves, if you will, at times, you know, kind of together, it still is a challenge.
challenged no matter what way you want to. Absolutely. And, you know, this community's risen to that. I mean, I think that we're starting to see, you know, a little bit of a glimpse, I think, of some better news at the state level. You know, it's certainly not good news when you yesterday have 156 people that, you know, died from this pandemic in one day. And every day it's been like that for a while. And my heart and thoughts go out to all of the families and friends of those 3,600 people. We know that that's been a continued increase. But we also know that testing has gotten to a point at its all-time high. You can see the remote testing centers out there. All you have to do is check our portal or the Boston Globe or Franklin Matters or any news site in Massachusetts, WBUR, and you're going to see those updates in real time when those announcements are, NECN. And you're starting to see the hospitalization piece is really turned around, where 6 weeks ago there was a real threat that you know, our hospital system was not going to be able to accommodate the demand of what people needed. And that the governor has been very clear, has really had some positive signs. And why that's important, because if you break your leg, if you get ill from some other way, if you need a surgery, if you need something else that's not COVID related, which there are people out there that have health problems that are going to need attention, it means there's space for you in our healthcare system. And that is something that if there's ever another little hotspot or surge in the future of this or anything, we know that there's space. You know, that should provide additional comfort to people. It does to me, but that should provide some additional comfort to people that our healthcare system, you know, is starting to be able to handle some additional capacity, which is really good news. So, you know, the governor made his announcement to continue his executive orders of no gatherings of more than 10 or over, non-essential businesses through May 18th. The same will be said this afternoon. Anne Marie and I will be putting out a departmental update with a reentry update. We're going to begin to phase in some very light skeleton crews and some very safe parameters in town, such as the drive-through will reopen in a week. The custodians will be needed back in a week to work on some issues relative to the schools and preparing them. In some ways, for the custodial department, this is a bonus part to the summer season to maybe go in and do some solo projects on painting and allow some additional work to be done for an extra 6 weeks or so for John Rondo, Mike Carter, and our electrician Dave. And, you know, we might be able to get a little extra done in the buildings while there's some room. And, you know, obviously we're going to have regulations for employees like all the other essential businesses in town with face coverings and temperature checks and other stuff. But, you know, I think that these signs point toward a slow reentry, as the governor of Rhode Island has presented and the governor of Maine, and I think Governor Baker in a couple of weeks. So we're going to be there until May 18th, and then we'll just take it in a couple of weeks and see what happens. But I think there are some, you know, some small positive signs out there that I hope people who are listening and people in Franklin realize are actually in our world. These are really big deals, and these trends are really, really good signs that we can hopefully point to as success.
The good signs are, one, due to we have been social distancing appropriately, so we haven't truly been spreading yet to create the surge that would tax the health system, as we've talked about. We've stayed within the capacity, which was the key for the flattening of the curve. And we've done that. And now, carefully, to your point, you know, coming back here and there, I believe, at least from my years reporting on the school committee, the summertime certainly was always full of projects. So yeah, if they can get a 6 weeks or so head start on some of those projects in the buildings, that will certainly help the schedule, especially as we don't know what the schedule is going to be coming into September anyway. So better prepared. To your point, the town has been fairly well prepared to begin with. So this is just another step in that preparation as we go. Coming out of the Board of Health meeting on Monday, they issued the update on the emergency order requiring facial coverings for the essential business employees, or we'll be all, I think, curious as to what the feedback is as they get into their meeting next week, where they're going to review that and see if they need to do anything else.
You know, the Board of Health, as a quick review, I think most people in Franklin have seen this. They basically put forth a mandatory ruling that facial coverings are needed for essential business employees. They've also made a very strong advisory for customers to be in the same boat. I hope I'm not misquoting, but I know each grocery chain, for example, in Franklin's, their corporate offices have made their individual corporations declarations of how they're handling this across their whole company, not just in Franklin, but Shaw's and Big Y, I believe, are asking and mandating that customers have facial coverings when coming in. I believe Stop and Shop is being a little more flexible. They have some protocols in place. I think at some point, it's becoming evident through evidence, as well as messaging from the governor and the regional governor's coalition, that customers going into essential businesses, it's clear that the face coverings are going to be a part of our future. It's just clear. And I think, as you've seen over this timeline, originally these face covering issues was kind of poo-pooed, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. You had 10, 20% of the public doing them. Now you've got, you know, an overwhelming majority of people that I see when I'm out, you know, driving around or doing essential business too, or being in town. The vast majority of citizens are doing this. And so it may be even the most effective thing at this point of where we're headed. And so I think next week, the Board of Health will meet again. The chair, Bridget Sweet, did mention they were going to take up the issue of customers. I know I've gotten a lot of feedback in support of that. I know that the Board of Health members have as well. I think it's something that a lot of the staff, the fire and police have instituted. And so, you know, you look at the trends and you just think that maybe next week they'll take some additional feedback and make it possibly mandatory for customers to have facial coverings when they go to essential businesses. But we'll wait till next Wednesday. The town council nor I have any authority here. This is all under the purview of the Board of Health, the elected right. Board of Health. And so we'll see what they do next Wednesday on the 6th.
To clear from the Attorney General, Martha Healy, as well, through to the Board of Health, the kind of the inclusionary aspect, certainly there are some disabled folks who it's hard for them to do that. The other piece I was picking up, clearly those who are hard of hearing do lip reading. And obviously with your face covered, they can't read your lips. So there are impacts. Right. We're not, yeah. And we're just going to have to be mindful of some of those, you know, so it's not just, oh, they're deviating. They're being a bad guy. There may be legitimate reasons for these.
I think there are. I mean, you know, do I want to do this when I go out all the time? No. You look at the reality and it's clearly going to be a part of, I think, the proposal the governor puts out in a couple of weeks. And I think the evidence is clear. And I just try to see the marathon from the sprint, you know, in the long haul, if we're ever going to be in a situation when we get up to a vaccine or, you know, at a testing point where everybody can have it all the time, what they need, I think you're going to be in a position where we are going to need to band together as a society and do everything we can to try to prevent the transmission of this. Otherwise, we cannot get back to a place where people feel comfortable. And I think I've said it on the show, I think, a couple of times, but it continues to bear repeating. If we're worried about the economy, if we're worried about the impact of local businesses, if we're worried about families and we're worried about unemployment and all these issues, you know, at the end of the day, the goal needs to be, how do we make customers feel safe? Mm-hmm. And until people feel safe, I'm hard-pressed to believe that every theater, restaurant, brewery, distillery, retail, YMCA, nonprofit, college, any sector of the economy you see rebounds to the extent that they were in March or earlier this year. And so yeah. I think that the feeling of people in that comfort is what the goal always should be toward. And I think if you want, you know, I was looking at something today saying, you know, it feels as if it's become an either or, like either you're for, you know, when I watch TV, it's either you're for the economy or you're for public health. And really, they're not mutually exclusive at all. And I think the one of the reasons why the economy was so strong over the last 10 years, among many things outside of this debate, is the feeling that people had of feeling as if they got a new job, their lives are moving forward, they took a vacation, they saved some money, maybe bought a new house, had a baby, retired, whatever their personal experience was and priority in life up until this pandemic, people felt safe. And especially in Franklin, I know that that's the feeling, again, for different reasons, but I know people in Franklin do feel really safe in Franklin, and they should, from a public safety standpoint. But this is different, but it gets to the same human emotion, right, Steve? It still gets to that place of, do I feel comfortable going out, and do I feel individual, and do I feel free?
Agreed. Yeah, because it's unfortunate, but the nature of this particular virus, it's insidious. And we're also seeing the increase in the numbers around the asymptomatic, the people mm-hmm. who actually have it or may have had it and didn't know. They're probably more than, and the real numbers, the real story will be told after the fact. But at this point in time, it's certainly much more than they were anticipating. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. We just need to do the facial covering to protect us from spreading what we don't know if we have it. I may have it. I don't know.
Yeah. That's the crazy thing is that we don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, until, you know, I don't know, you don't know, nobody knows. But the reality is we've got these parameters that have been put up by the CDC of 14-day isolation periods and quarantines, and we know these work. And until we get to a point where everyone, or at least the you know, 99%, whatever, you know, makeup number you want to use to illustrate that, once you get to a place where the overwhelming majority of people are practicing these things, if we do have it and we don't know, and we are asymptomatic, how do we then assure ourselves that it's flushed out of our system, just like any other virus, just like mm-hmm. the flu, right?
Right.
Viruses are viruses. And they're different than bacteria, and they're treated differently. And in this case, you got to take that rest and do what you got to do to flush it out of the system. And then, you know, hopefully after a certain period of time, we can feel more assured, and the governor will feel more assured that he can use his executive powers to, quote unquote, re-enter.
Yep, the new normal. And in the meantime, Anne-Marie, I think we talked last week, but you should another spotlight this week on the finance and treasurer combined departments.
Yes, we combined the finance department along with the information from the treasurer collector. I spoke to Chris Sandini and Carrie Bertoni, and they filled me in on so much stuff, actually. Not only how their department, you know, typically works, but a lot of what they've been doing differently. Just their departments oversee a number of other areas: assessors, procurement, the comptroller's office, payroll. All of these aspects can fall under the finance umbrella. And most of these functions, if not all of these functions, have happened in the building, you know, up until now. And they have... obviously, with the situation that we're in, everybody is remote, aside from Carrie, who comes into the office infrequently, but she has to come in order to process checks, because obviously we need to get those going and keep them moving. But everyone else is working remotely, and a lot of these people and staff members have never worked at home before. And it's been, both Chris and Carrie expressed how incredible everybody has been in just literally moving their desktops and printers and mm-hmm. their entire work setup home, and just getting up and running very quickly. Payroll has never been done remotely. Accounts payable has never been done remotely. all of these aspects, authorizations are now not being done in ink. There's the passing of the papers can't happen right now. So both Carrie and Chris also talked a lot about how obviously nobody likes the situation. Nobody is happy the situation that we're in. But, you know, they're finding those silver linings of efficiencies, new ways of doing things, ways that they'll never go back to. And they did talk about how, you know, this was always their goal. You know, they always wanted to find the most efficient way to do everything, you know, definitely.
The paperless environment, maybe. Yes. Here, finally.
Yes. You know, and Chris said it, he's like, I just have never seen, he never saw the point. They would just tape boxes and boxes of paper, you know, that nobody would ever look through again. And now moving everything to digital, online authorizations, just is a better way of doing business in 2020 in many ways. So, said the silver lining in here is that we're finding a lot of efficiencies, which is good. You know, although that is great, to have happening. Carrie was talking about vendors. You know, they've been working with vendors to try to have electronic payments happening rather than, again, the passing of the papers and checks. And a lot of them have been jumping right on board. They've had 60 some vendors say, yes, we want to do it that way. So the future will definitely be less paper.
Yeah.
Which is you know, not a bad thing. So, but their departments are really, they're all very intertwined. They all depend on one another, and they both expressed how closely they've been in contact with one another. Lots of Zoom meetings, multiple per week with everyone, just getting together to talk about projects, and everything still rolling. You know, like since the building might be temporarily closed, but business is still happening. Checks are still processed, payroll's still happening, just not in the typical way. So yeah, that's where they're at.
Indeed. I remember when, actually, I'll have to try and remember, but it was several years ago when the online bill painting was first introduced, and I jumped on it because I was able to pay on, and I've been paying online bills for a number of years, and finally the town of Franklin came online. It was like, hey, good.
Yes. And actually, I learned something as a resident. So just like you, Steve, I'm an online bill pay person. When we pay the bills, you go on the bank account and pay the bills. And something that Carrie explained to me, which I didn't realize, is, you know, obviously when you pay online with your banking, they still cut a physical check and send it. So it wasn't, so not everyone is an electronic transfer. So some people have been calling and saying, oh, you know, when will my check be processed? And the fastest way to make sure it is done, you know, really efficiently is on Franklin's UniPay. Just to go online, go to the payment portal. You can download a PDF of your bill. You can pay it immediately, get an immediate receipt. And then, you know, you're not having to wonder whether, you know, just with the paper trail of what's going on in the background right now. So I told her that she had one new person who was going to be doing that way going forward. Anyway, just again, finding efficiencies, the easiest ways to make things happen.
Yeah, because as a both resident and taxpayer and bill payer, you know, you always, you sometimes, maybe not always, but sometimes would use the float to your advantage, you know, write the check on a Friday, knowing they weren't going to process it until Monday or Tuesday. You can still take advantage of the float and schedule the payment in advance via the UniPay, and it still happens on that day. So
absolutely. You can just go right ahead. Exactly. It's very, very easy to use. So, and obviously all the things that our town has put in place, the use of the Google Suite, you know, sharing documents is easy. You know, it's just there's a lot of things that were in place that have made our transition to this remote work, you know, go as smoothly as possible. So they're all taking advantage of everything that we have at our disposal.
Good.
Thing I would add, Steve, really quickly about that is, it's just, you know, this stuff is really hard for finance folks. This is not unique to Franklin. You know, when you're in accounting and payroll, you know, Jan and Liz and Lisa and Linda and Chris on the school side, you know, Erica and Miriam and their team, you know, these types of changes are for the average person. We say, oh, come on, let's just change this stuff around. But there's a lot of work that goes in that they do. And in some ways, there are a lot of ways they're creatures of habit. You know, these are folks that have spent years mastering the quickest possible ways to click buttons, buy software to make things efficient, streamlined. And when you make all of a sudden you have to do this all from home, it's a significant challenge to just change that. Also, that by default, you're going to have people that it takes longer to do things. One of the challenges you have with people between Google and Microsoft, right, is they know every button where to click in an Excel spreadsheet.
Sure.
In Google, it's the same function. You just got to kind of find a different place to do it. So
it's always in a different place.
It's in a different place. But, you know, I think it's worth one of the reasons why I had the spotlight go out on them and Amory chose them first was because, you know, this is a story worth telling. That with you, when you have the right staff and the right people and the right attitude, anything can get done. The joke I make all the time is, you know, every snow emergency, every holiday, there was always a discussion about who's going to do payroll. Somebody's got to come into the office, you know, and there would be a debate, and, you know, and more. And now we don't need to do that anymore. So going forward, if a holiday comes up or an emergency, like a snow emergency, and we need to process payroll, we now are more prepared than we were before. It's good stuff.
Nothing wrong with that part.
Nothing at all.
I think we talked last week as well, but it actually did happen this week. The pink bag pickup returned.
The pink bag pickup did return. And I believe it was very well received from an email that Chris White had sent out. I think a lot of people really enjoy using this service. It's easy, it's helpful. And especially being home and cleaning out, I think a lot, from what I have heard, it was, there have been a lot of pink bags out this week. So they should be replacing them once they pick them up, but people can always go online, simplerecycling.com, and order them. They just show up in the mail. I've done it myself. Mm-hmm. And you leave them out on your trash day. It's easy. It helps everyone involved, to be honest. It helps people clean out and donates to good causes and helps the town. So win-win-win.
It comes that full circle, but I'll get to that point. So yeah, I can attest. I know it was several weeks ago when I put out the pink bag and then it didn't get picked up. And then I've come to find out I'd missed that notification that they had stopped. So I was like, okay, you know, I'm not perfect. I missed things in the radar. So this week I heard it was coming. In the meantime, that one bag became two bags. So we put the two bags out, and yes, there were two bags tied to one of the toters, so they were replaced when they got picked up. And
yes,
it's good.
Yep, it's good stuff. It's a great program.
And then ultimately, that also ties back into a slight reduction in the fees because the budgeting helps on that side from the waste management fee. But Jamie, I think to one of your schedule items this week coming up, there's a budget subcommittee on May 4th, if I recall.
Yep. So we have a budget subcommittee on Monday. You know, the chair of that committee is Matt Kelly, also Debbie Plegri, Tom Mercer, and Melanie Hamlin. And they'll be looking at a revised working budget model where it'll be 2 months to the date of when we had the last meeting on March 4th at the council. Obviously, the situation has changed quite a bit you know, you have a situation where, you know, we were looking at increasing revenues projections, by, you know, $500,000, whatever the approximate number was. And now we're in a position where we're going to end up likely cutting, you know, between $2 and $3 million. I did put a memo out that, Councilor Kelly was looking for, last week, and it looks like the revenues may not be as bad as you know, we maybe predicted. We did go through the local receipts. We are looking at probably a 20% reduction in those. It'll be a little less than 2.4 million, probably, you know, probably in the 1.5 million range. New growth will be lowered to the area where we were in 2009, because I think that at least that crisis, you know, gave us some bullet point for And the state aid we put in the governor's budget in January, which had a lot of factors in it, and we're leaving it there for now. I can tell you every town has a different strategy right now with how to move forward. Some are moving forward with their entire budget as written. Some are moving forward with the assumptive cuts like I'm doing. Some are, you know, going to take the month-by-month approach. You know, and the reality is, as I've said before, this is really like spring training right now. Normally, we're in our playoffs. We're going through the final motions to put a full budget together. And then when the budget is approved by the council, there's a kind of sense of relief for a year's worth of work done. Kind of get a month or two off while the finance team closes the books on the fiscal year. And by the time you come back in the fall after Labor Day, you know, you're back into it for the next fiscal year. This year is going to be a complete inverse of that. Really what we're doing now is really just putting the training wheels on for a year that we have no idea. There is no playbook, no crystal ball. And if anybody tries to tell you that they know what's going to happen, they say go right, you should go left. Because nobody knows. There's just too much uncertainty, as we talked about earlier in the program. So
yeah,
this is really a blueprint budget that's going to be presented on Monday. It will evolve before we get to the approval by the council in June, unquestionably. And we will have to come back at one or two times in the fiscal year and revise the budget number. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we are going to be in a situation that, you know, is going to be very challenging for the town. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, it's going to be a situation that there's going to be a lot of opinions, and we're going to consistently look at facts and take it as it will. A good example of this is state aid. We could all predict what the governor is going to do, but we really don't know. They have an FY20 budget problem to solve.
First,
and then they have an FY21 budget problem to solve. There's $3.5 billion in the rainy day fund account. The Mass Taxpayers Association and the House Ways and Means Chair are predicting a $4.5 billion deficit. The numbers simply are never going to add up. And so there's no way that the state is going to use all the rainy day money. I think you're likely to get month by month budgets for the summer, and in likelihood maybe in the fall, Labor Day, have a state budget before tax rate setting season. I'm almost certain that there will likely be, you know, some of that damage will come down from the state to the localities. There's no way they could possibly fund us at the levels we had previously.
No.
Also throws into questions the Student Opportunity Act. I think it poses questions about what kind of cuts could happen to other agencies versus local aid. And there's also a health insurance piece where the state budget, really the biggest portion of their budget is really healthcare. And so medical costs. So just so many unknowns, you know, and I just can't. And again, we go back to the theme. People have to feel safe. And until people feel safe, we don't really know what the trends are going to show. We have speculation. We have modeling out there. You know, we can build some algorithms. But it doesn't really capture the human sentiment. And until we understand that, and we get back to action. You know, I think the opinions are all over the map. And so we're going to have to analyze those things. And this is the first meeting. There'll be another one after that, I would assume, of the Joint Budget Subcommittee with the School Committee and Finance Committee. And then we're into the Finance Committee hearings after Memorial Day.
Right.
You know, what we're looking at now is certainly a deep set of cuts for the school department. I think we're going to be looking at some cuts to DPW and the facilities departments. You know, at this time, it looks like some of the others will be spared. You know, we're going to try to take this one week at a time and evolve as we see fit. So, you know, we're going to do the best we can, and I know we're going to get through it, but it really is going to be one of those, again, those shocks to the system. Maybe we're going to have to be out of our element here. You know, in the sense that this is just not, you know, usually our staff at this point, Steve, is tense to get the entire budget produced. And usually after the budget's approved, we kind of like, you know, feel like, you know, you just kind of like, you know, won the Super Bowl or something.
Yeah.
It's going to be anything but like that. It's past. It's just going to be completely different. And
mm-hmm.
It's a stress that won't go away for, you know, for the rest of the year easily.
No, and in my conversation with our state rep, Jeff Roy, earlier this week, you know, he alluded to their issues, obviously, that you've mentioned as well. They also have the issue of how they are going to do business in this time, because currently they're trying to revise their rules so that they can do remote voting, based on what I've been hearing that apparently had run into some problems midweek. We'll see how that works its way out. Because then, yeah, they've got the two issues, the FY20 budget and then the FY21 budget. He certainly agreed with me that, you know, mid-August, and you said, you know, we may have something by Labor Day. That's about in the same ballpark. So, yeah, we are definitely going to be in a cycle dealing with uncertainty and dealing with some changing numbers.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, I'm hoping for a higher level of citizen engagement than usual.
To the extent that we have some time now, there should be an opportunity for people to tap in. Absolutely.
I think just to pay attention at a minimum, you know, there's going to be some very, very serious questions being posed to this community over the next 12 months. And again, a lot of opinions, and those are okay. We accept those. We want to hear people's feedback. And, you know, I think the most important thing, though, is even if you don't have an opinion and or if you don't want to share it publicly, that's okay. But, you know, just really make sure that you pay attention once a week, once a month. Check our town budget page, see what the latest is, you know, and, you know, to your own level of comfortability as any citizen, you can get involved how you see fit. But follow our Twitter pages. All those will be there. All the agendas, all the memos, all the information, budget page. We've got it all right there for you. You just got to kind of spend 5 or 10 minutes to scan through things. You know, sign up for email lists. I mean, I'm on a million email lists, and I just go through every day and delete what I'm not interested in. But as I always joke, you know, I'm glad I'm on that. Despite the fact that I get an email from LL Bean like 5 times a day, I'm always glad that I'm on the email list when they get that 40% off sale later in the fall, right?
The one you want.
And it's the same thing with our agendas and information.
Sure.
You know, yeah, we're going to give you an email a week or a couple in the COVID era, but you know, it's okay to chime in when you see fit and, you know, delete all our emails, but at least once every 2 weeks for 5 minutes to scan the council agendas and see what's cooking in town, you know, is not a huge ask. And we're putting it right in your lap for you. Amory does an unbelievable job with all this stuff. Alicia, Chrissy, the schools, you know, it just takes that extra little time. So hopefully this year we'll have a higher level of engagement than we have in the past. And you know, we'll see what comes out of it over the next 6 weeks. It's definitely going to be a more traditional process where there's a back and forth over what the assumptions are and whatnot. So, you know, in that vein, you know, it should be a good discussion.
Yeah, two quick points. Certainly with the additional technology that between TV and radio and podcasts, et cetera, we can bring. So now people will be able to your point, whether it's an email newsletter, go online, et cetera, you'll also be able to tap into the replays, use the podcast to listen. So they'll be much more available to truly give you the whole story. And the nuances, because the nuances are always the key piece. And then to reinforce your other point, yeah, ultimately it's the assumptions. If we agree on the set of assumptions, the rest of it's going to fall through properly. But if we don't agree on the set of assumptions, that's where we have the difference of opinion, and that's where we have some discussions until we reach that happy point.
And I think, you know, just to go out of my territory here a little bit onto your next topic, I mean, the school committee approved a budget this year, an initial budget, and I think it's worth talking about for a moment, and I'm not telling any tales out of school. You know, the folks that are out there that are listening in the school community, which is all of us, but let's narrow it down a little bit to, you know, interested stakeholders and parents and stuff. This is your year. You need to get involved. That is it. You know, I've talked on many times to you, Steve, and in public about the police department in the past had given up $500,000 of overtime, and we negotiated a complete new schedule that the officers had to change their entire lives to get accustomed to, to hire 5 more officers to keep our community safe. You know, our fire department just went through a collective bargaining process where they got rid of civil service, a very deeply held union benefit. They got rid of day jobs, stipends, individual stipends.
Sure.
And they did that so that we raised ambulance fees. They did a whole study with our consultant about how our rates were way below average. And we did those reforms so that we could hire 4 more paramedics next year on January 1st, which is a commitment we all made to redesign and reform the fire department completely for the future. And the DPW, I'm not going to speak too much just because there's a couple more steps involved, but you know, they're looking at significant reforms of some deeply held things. They're changing the way we're doing business to accommodate the public demand of what people want today and in the future, not with what we needed in 2000. I just sit there and listen to comparisons of population and call volume about what it was like in 2000. And I think I speak for the comments I've gotten from citizens. No one cares. They care about today. And what happens tomorrow.
Right.
And as a customer service delivery organization, we need to always do that. I think that the discussion for the school committee and school department, which is not something that has not happened for a long time, is not just the question about Davis Thayer, but also these broader questions of school enrollment. You know, you've seen a decline, heavy decline in student enrollment over the years. There's more choice out there with you know, private institutions, charter school, tri-county, homeschooling. There's a lot of different options. How do you stay competitive? And I think that the conversation is really going to be something that the community is going to need to band together and realize what exactly they need for an educational system, and what's our commitment to that as a community from here and into the future. There's no question that remote learning is another factor in there that I'm sure everyone's going to have to try to analyze and what that looks like. I have no doubt that our department and our school committee are up for those challenging conversations. But I mean, this is the year that people, parents and citizens and interested folks in the school district are going to have to really get involved. And by way of tradition, in the way our charter works, the town administrator is required to put forth a budget on behalf of the whole community. And Mr. Nutting, my predecessor, and many others have been very clear on this in the past. I've been very clear about this numerous times, so it's worth reiterating one more. I don't get into the debate. I am not an educator. I firmly trust and believe in our superintendent, her staff, and all the teachers and staff that are out there, many of whom I know well. These are top tier people that we are blessed and proud to have. And as we move forward, I am not the one, nor is it the chairman of the council's ability to get into policy debates with the school department about how they spend money. That's their policy debate with them in the school committee. That's their responsibility. And how my job is to give them a number about what we can afford out of the bigger picture of the community. And I think that you know, we were having these conversations, Steve, and both Anne Marie and everyone on this call knows, and everybody listening knows, these conversations have been going on for years with the school department. And so, you know, this is now a moment where we're going to be really forced as a community to address those policy decisions, and those have to be dealt with at the school committee and school department level. And that's just, you know, it's just the way it's going to be. So, and it's the way it should be. It's the way it legally has to be too. And so this isn't something the council and the TA can kind of get everybody out of. It's really something that they're going to have to work on. And they can only do that, I believe, if the school community really works with them and engages in those debates.
Agreed. Yeah, without naming names, I know people will be able to recognize there have been some council members who from time to time have tried to do more than manage to the one budget line item, because that's sure. all they really do. And I understand that, but, you know,
and
I'm sorry.
If I could add on that, Steve, it's a really good point. But if I could add on that, I've worked in other communities. I've worked with a lot of communities. I have to say, that's par for the course. It's no different in Franklin than it is anywhere else. There are boards of selectmen members that have very opinionated views on school districts.
Well,
if you went over to Brentham or Norfolk or Plainville and you were to talk about King Philip, I guarantee you the board of selectmen in those towns have very big opinions one way or the other on what the schools are doing. And everywhere I've worked, or whoever I've worked with, you know, that's always been the case. And there's a reason for that, because the school department is the largest portion of almost every town's budget. And number two, we are dealing with children. And, yes, you know, I think at the end of the day, there's a part of all of us where no one I know is trying to give our children a worse opportunity than what we had. We all, whether we have a lot of kids, no kids, we're young, we're old, our kids are gone, grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
We're all here and bound together by our ability of wanting to give our children a greater opportunity than us. And
agreed,
that'll never change, in my opinion, thank God. And I think when you get into that, that's why you get opinions all over the place. But, you know, legally, it's the school committee's department. It's their job. It's their business. And they need to, you know, be able to work with what they have and to be able to make those reforms or those changes and engage the community in what those options are. That's the most important thing. They've got to engage the community,
yeah,
in what those options are so that the community feels as if they're a part of navigating the choppy waters ahead.
Yeah, and I've Franklin Matters is on record. At the beginning of the year, I had put a bunch of, you know, items to watch list for 2020, and school committee clearly in their budget and the multiple issues themed within that, Davis Thayer being one. Now we've got this pandemic to deal with, right? Yes. And that just, obviously, it's been a part of our discussion on other places. Now, okay, so why did the school committee bring up this particular budget? Well, this was their priority list. And, oh, by the way, they're also spun around dealing with educating our young folk, our future, in a remote learning environment, which they never had done before. So they're spending time doing that. They left the budget alone for the time being. But it's, yep, at least a starting point, because clearly going forward, what will opening the schools look like, right? What will be that safety factor? How will the children maintain social distancing, assuming it's going to at some point in time still be maintained, and thereby what will it do to the bus routes and the buses,
sure,
and the class sizes?
Enrollment.
I mean, there's multiple factors. I wouldn't want to speculate, because that can, yeah, be all over the place.
And there's going to be a state part to that too, Steve. Right?
There's a state part, absolutely.
Commissioner of Education has been granted authority, and,
yep,
and every district's different, you know, and I mean, dramatically different. And so, yeah, it. I mean, there's a lot of choices. I mean, I've joked about this in the past, and I don't mean this to be insensitive or inflammatory as a precaution, which is you know, it's like I've been watching the show Ozark. And Laura Linney's character has on it a quote where she says something to the effect of, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. And in some ways, there's a truth to that. I think this, yeah, is a real opportunity to present a vision to the community about what the future of public education looks like statewide, as you point out, Steve, but also locally for the residents here. And I think they acknowledged that at their meeting on Tuesday, you know, in terms of this is an unrealistic budget. It's not really reality, but it's also part of the superintendent's vision of where she believes we need to go. And I think that's something that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to spend some time on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten to know Superintendent Hearn obviously very well. One of the most talented people I could ever possibly work with. Her care and her focus on providing, you know, not just a world-class education, but something extremely meaningful and successful, as somebody who is a real proud and true believer in public education. You know, I have no doubt in my mind she is putting forth what she believes is the best for this community. And by putting that out there and continuing that debate, even in this pandemic, despite the remote learning aspects and the cost behind that and what are the classrooms going to look like, now is the time where this pandemic is going to really engage, hopefully, everybody, throughout the community to be a part of that vision with her.
Yes.
And that's really, I can't undervalue how important that is. It's not my job to go in and answer questions, which I've certainly gotten about, you know, this line item or that, or, you know, what about this? I mean, I, the superintendent and the school committee don't come and ask me their opinions on waterline main projects, or, you know, their expertise isn't in managing a water treatment plant.
Right.
We all have our expertise and, you know, there couldn't be a better fit than her and her team for this district. And I think that hopefully in the coming months, they'll have a lot of citizens work with them to see what this looks like. And, you know, I know I know one thing for sure. There may be some frustrated conversations coming up over the next several months and beyond. But I know that the town of Franklin will rise to this. I know people will understand where they're coming from and where the citizens are coming from. And I think this is in some ways a healthy exercise. As much as I sit here today exhausted on a Friday, as we were talking about at the beginning of this meeting, you know, ready for a good night's sleep, this is an opportunity that we can hopefully redefine another generation of educational services for the families of Franklin. So we will make lemonade out of
this. This is the time to define that new normal.
That's right.
And exactly. Figure out which way we're going to go.
That's right.
And speaking of schools, if I recall, Anne Marie, you mentioned we wanted to reinforce kind of the USDA grant and the food that the high school has been delivering, but we need to expand that awareness as well.
Yes. So the food services department at Franklin Public Schools, Colin Boisbert, who is the director of food services, applied for a USDA grant, which they received. So they are expanding the program to children 21 and under in Franklin. Actually, you don't even have to be from Franklin. It's for anyone 21 and under to come and pick up grab-and-go breakfast and lunch options behind the back of Franklin High School. Mm-hmm. They have it very clearly marked. There's a great operations for no contact. And there's grab-and-go breakfast bags. Then there's also a number of different options for lunch. There's ready-to-eat salad sandwiches. There's also heat-up options, all meeting the dietary guidelines with the USDA. And they just want to make sure that everyone is aware that this is available, especially in this time of need. Everybody can pull up in the back, tell the wonderful food service employees what they need, and it will be brought out to their vehicle and set on a shelf for a no contact pickup. So just want to make sure everyone is aware of the opportunity and takes advantage of it if they need.
And then continuing on the community front, there's now a scavenger hunt for a photo contest, right?
Yes, the Franklin Cultural District just this week put out a website that details their photo scavenger hunt. There's four categories involved that are all centered around the town of Franklin, historical figures, famous Franklin buildings. Door to door is one of the more vague categories where people could get a little bit more creative. You know, there's obviously a lot of doors in the cultural district, and doors can be interpreted. So that's the other one. And then tell a story is obviously a little bit more open-ended of a category. So they're encouraging people to take a walk on a nice day. You don't need a fancy camera. Whip out your iPhone, whip out your tablet, take some pictures, you know, get creative, and you can submit them to their Facebook page. They're going to be putting them on their website, on the scavenger hunt website specifically for people to view. And then there are prizes involved. So definitely check that out. It's on their social media, our social media, on their website. So it's a really kind of cool idea to give our residents of all ages something to do while we're under this quarantine, something they can do. We talk a lot about what we can't do, but this is something we can do, obviously, while still following all the guidelines and restrictions and being safe.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, picking back to one of Jamie's points around the frustration. I think the frustration comes where if we're trying to do something, we really don't control it. We just have to be mindful of what we can control, what we can do, and go there and do that. And just, you know, we can't do the other. So we'll forget about it for the time being.
Yeah, I'll mention one thing to interrupt on that, Steve.
No,
good, personal responsibility. Right. You know, there's during the Tom Brady Facebook series a few years ago, he had a great quote that an attitude that I've always kind of held with me, which is, you know, there's certain things in life you can control and there's a lot of things you can't control. And,
right.
You know, we as people, you know, we only have what we control in our own lives. And I think on something like this is a good example of that.
You sure. know,
I can't control the people across the street who are not wearing face coverings. But what I control is my action near those folks, and I can walk to the other side of the street or stop or keep my face covered or politely ask somebody to help me out. And so I think that's a different way of thinking. On the face coverings, I do want to mention, because my incredible wife just gave me a note as she was listening from the other room to this radio interview, is that Governor Baker just signed an executive order requiring all people to wear face coverings in public. So, look at that. Breaking news here.
Hot
on
off the press.
Telecast. By the time
hot
it runs, it won't be. But I think while we're here, I think it shows the nature of our conversation. But that is something that he just apparently announced about 50 minutes ago. So.
Yeah. I had gotten the alert that he was going to start his meeting while we were doing ours. So, yeah, that is indeed breaking. And there'll be additional support for that as this gets published, and then there'll be other things out there through our various social media channels as well.
It's also a great like example of how this is changing while we're on the radio, and I think it's an example of an indication of my life and Anne-Marie's life right now. Anne-Marie? I mean,
absolutely.
You put something out and then all of a sudden it changes. And I know what we're writing for May 4th to May 18th is going to change. And, you know, and that's just the nature of what we're in. But, you know, the good news is our staff is on it and we're tracking it and we're keeping it up to date. So yeah. I know that Anne-Marie has one more topic before we leave that is really exciting. And she,
there's the segue to that as well, because it's one of the things that we can change, and recognizing that certainly the high schoolers are experiencing a total change to their life,
yes.
their graduation, whenever.
Yes, absolutely.
But the school and the town can coordinate and do something simple.
Yes. So obviously, like you said, Steve, there's a lot that we can't do. There's a lot of change happening, especially for our seniors and a lot of the things they were really looking forward to and acknowledging their accomplishments. So last week, our facilities director, Mike D'Angelo, actually reached out to the school department. Jamie was, I believe, on the email with an idea of turning on the lights at the Franklin High Stadium on Fridays to honor our senior class. And everybody immediately was like, yes, you know, this is definitely going to happen. How do we make it happen? Yeah. And Ryan Jetty got involved. He's programmed the lights. Sarah Ahern immediately said, yes, we want it to happen. There's now a sign hanging up by Horseman as well, honoring the seniors, that was organized by a parent and also donated by a local sign company, signed by Cam. Yep. But so every Friday night from last Friday until June 5th, which was the intended date of the graduation. 2020 graduation, the lights at the stadium will be on from 8 p.m. until 8:20 p.m.
20 minutes
for the class of 2020. It's a small gesture, but just trying to let them know, their families know, we're all thinking of them, we're with them, we sympathize with the things that they've lost, and I know everyone's working hard to come up with something and trying to figure out what we can do to honor these graduates. So no answers to that yet, but time will tell. So if you happen to drive by the high school complex and see the lights on a Friday night, you'll know why.
Yes. And I do want to include in my walk later today to make sure I can go take some photos of that.
Yes, definitely. I was there last Friday and when the lights first went on, and there's cars in the parking lot watching, and you know, you hear horns beeping, and it was cool. It's sad. We could give them more, and obviously we'll hope to give them more, but I feel like there's some appreciation there for that. And a cool thing that I noticed, well, somebody pointed out to me actually, was that 8/20 is actually 2020 in military time. Yeah. So kind of a cool little tidbit.
24-hour clock, 2020, 8/20.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so. That's cool.
Yeah. Thinking definitely. Of them, they've definitely. Got a bright future ahead. Times are strange right now for sure, but they will move into their adult world and have an interesting story to tell for sure, and the future is still bright. So,
and by doing what we're doing with the new thing on the facial masks, etc., facial coverings, hopefully they'll move into the future. We'll all move into the future healthy.
Yes,
that's the key piece.
The goal, for sure.
Yes. So, mindful of your time and changing circumstances, as in the case of this, things are changing all the time. I'm sure you might have some other things to do. So, as we kind of wrap up, anything else we need to do?
I think that's it for now, Steve. I mean, we'll we could have a whole nother episode tomorrow, Sunday, Monday, but you know, the weekly I think makes a lot of sense. And we'll see what Monday brings.
Yes. Some more new things.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve, so much.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.